Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a weekly motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, and specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. And this week, we have a special opportunity for you guys to learn a little bit about your motorcycle's oil, and specifically maybe analyzing oil, what that could do for you. Maybe you change your oil too often, maybe not enough, and just the intricacies of engine oil in general. And so we're bringing on an awesome guest that I'm very excited about. As you can tell, probably at the moment, I do not have my co-host Cole with me again this week, which is okay. He does have other things that he does in life. So, but we do have a special guest for this week known as Joe Adams, or Blackstone Joe, over at Blackstone Laboratories. So we're going to get him on here, give him a second or a chance to introduce himself and hopefully learn something about oil and specifically motorcycle related. The questions that I have are, how often should we change it? Are we changing it too often? Does riding a motorcycle to racetrack or even racing a motorcycle actually change the breakdown time or the lubricity or the lubricating ability or viscosity or anything else of the oil? And hopefully we'll get some of those answers tonight and be able to move forward with more info. So without further ado, we'll roll an intro and come back with Blackstone Joe.
Yesterday at one point, I was in sick.
So I just kind of wanted to jump in, give you a chance to introduce yourself, introduce Blackstone, and tell us a little bit about, you know, you and the company.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, I'm Joe Adams. I say that as if there's a chance that many know who I am, but it does take me by surprise. I will say how many listeners, you know, our show Slick Talk has gained over the course of helping folks access oil analysis with Blackstone Laboratories. So Blackstone is a family-owned and operated laboratory in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and we specialize in oil analysis. So in order to introduce people to the concept, I usually like to say that, you know, when you think about oil and the fact that it's there to clean and lubricate, testing that oil is going to tell you a lot about the system that oil is working to protect. So not only is this a non-invasive diagnostic, which is only going to run you $35 for the standard analysis, You can also utilize oil analysis to find out how long you should be running the oil, if you should be going shorter than you are, or if you're interested in extended oil use, that's something we will help you with as you build trends for the engine that you're taking care of. So, you know, not only is this going to help you get the most out of your oil change, it's also going to save you money in terms of catching a problem in the early stages before it's too far gone.
Okay, awesome. So obviously, you know, from the sound of it, and I know this, but you guys don't just do motorcycles, but that is what I think we're here to talk about for the most part tonight. As I've mentioned to you, our listeners are generally people that ride their motorcycles on racetracks at relatively high speeds or under a lot of load.
Right.
So what's the, you know, for that aspect, besides just engine health and whatever, what would be the benefit for someone that's, you know, running a race bike specifically to send a sample into you guys?
Well, with harder use, you know, anything more demanding, be it on the racetrack or otherwise, you can run into an engine generating more metal than it otherwise would be. Okay. And metal, as it builds up, there is a point where so much metal can turn the oil abrasive, prevent it from cleaning and lubricating properly, not to mention the fact that in addition to harder use, you can run into a lot of metal content if there's issues with contamination. So you're going to want to stay on top of things like fuel, coolant, excess dirt, all things you can find in a standard analysis. Not only that, we're going to be looking at how the oil and the oil filter are holding up for you. So Obviously, poor oil filtration is going to lead to solids circulating in the crankcase, not going to do the oil or oil sharing parts any favors. a lot of people are concerned with how the oil itself is going to hold up as well. So we're going to look at the viscosity and see where that is. Now, importantly, you know, oil that's in systems that is lubricating both the engine, the clutch, can be pretty demanding. That can lead to certain things breaking down, such as the viscosity. So if that's a low reading, it can be the result of the system that's in shearing that oil down. And when you talk about shearing, that's the breakdown of viscosity improving additives. Now, generally it's harmless. And the way I illustrate that being harmless is wear metals generally are not going to go up just because the viscosity is going to drop a little below that expected range. Okay. So you want to go beyond that and look at the entirety of the report to see how that oil is doing. But those are all things that are going to show up in a report.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. As far as ease of, just to almost go back, but ease of sending you a sample, which I can speak to a little bit because I actually just did that a couple weeks ago. But,
oh, awesome.
But how easy it is it? What does that process look like? Say we're coming up to the end of season this year. Maybe some people are questioning whether or not they need to get a new engine or how they're looking. They've never done this before. What does the process look like to get you guys a sample and kind of moving forward through there?
So it's very accessible in the sense that any clean, dry container that can hold 3.5 ounces thereabouts of used oil is going to work. But of course, the cleanest way to do it is to order a test kit from us. So okay. A free test kit is available on our website just by going to our homepage at blackstone-labs.com. We'll send you the kit that has everything you need. But the reason I bring up the earlier point about any clean, dry container being doable is that some people end up being so pressed in a situation, say it's a pre-buy or they are really suspicious of a problem right after like a track weekend, and they need to send that sample before a kit can get to them. Well, you can do that as long as it's a clean, dry container and you include paperwork. That's perfectly fine with us. If you want to send it to us in the mail, again, sending it in the mail is perfectly fine. And I just want to reiterate that because some people think that it's not going to go with USPS. It will. The only thing you can't send that we test through the mail would be like gasoline. And even that you can also send if you order a fuel kit. So it's really easy. Best way to go about it, I'd say, in terms of just making sure you have all the bases covered, is to order our free kit. But any clean, dry container with the information regarding what is your sampling is going to work.
Okay. Does that count? So what if, if I had just done an oil change and I had a little bit of residue on my fill bottle of the new oil, would that?
Oh, like if you're pouring the old oil into a container that had the new oil?
If that's all I got.
Yeah, it's generally fine because really any residue in the bottle is not going to amount to enough to significantly dilute that 3.5 ounces that we're talking about that's necessary for testing. So some small amounts, okay. And, residual, whether it's in the container itself or even in the used oil you're sampling, you think about the fact there's always going to be some carryover from the oil change previous in that motor. Yeah. You're going to have some residual, whether it's used. And then if you take it from a container, generally those things are going to offset. So I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Okay. All right. Well, good to know. Okay. Well, so how, just out of curiosity, you guys as a company, how many motorcycle clients do you tend to find compared to your other services that you offer?
So I would say the vast majority of what we do is going to be gasoline, diesel engines that are, mainly commuter cars, big rigs, and then next after that would probably be aircraft, and then motorcycle engines would probably be the notch below that.
Okay.
We really are big in the circles of, the aircraft community and people who are trying to take care of their cars, but motorcycles are not that far behind in the sense that we see them every day.
Okay.
As far as like manufacturer examples I have, we're looking at everything ranging from Kawasaki, Yamaha, Ducati, Honda. It's a pretty widespread, and what we want to do is craft our averages that are specific to the engine type you're sampling. So even if it's not, you know, the leader of the pack in terms of our customer base. Mm-hmm. We go just as far in the sense of dialing in averages specific to what it is you're sampling so you can see what's typical. So given that oil analysis is rather niche in and of itself, I think people can assume that we might not have averages, but rest assured that when you're sending in a sample, even if it's not the predominant class of engine type, we still have a well-developed average base for the vast majority of manufacturers and makes and models out there.
Okay. Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Well, so on the other side of that though, you know, I've had a lot of, I do a lot of oil changes myself. I've actually, up until this point, to be honest with you, never thought about sending oil in. Not once. I was like, no, there's no, whatever. If the engine blows up, I'll get a new engine. Not too worried about it. So for people that are much like myself, because I can see, you know, I can see the metal shards that collect in the magnet on the bottom. I can see everything. The oil's black. It's fine.
Right.
What are the benefits of, you know, you talk about elongating oil life, elongating oil use, and seeing premature wear maybe, or just wear in general. So how, yeah, I guess what are the benefits of doing an analysis compared to just, I change my oil often enough, I should be fine.
Yeah. So while you can certainly see a problem with the naked eye, be it in the form of visible metal or when there's, you know, say a significant coolant leak and the oil's turning gray, you know, you can obviously see a problem that way. But we want to go a step further than that. We want to catch it before you're seeing issues visually, because problems start on a much smaller scale. So when parts are starting to wear, first of all, they're always going to leave behind some amount of metal in terms of part per million, which is what we are finding in spectral analysis, much smaller than what you can see visually. And generally, problems start small and then they advance. So we're trying to help catch a problem well before the point you're seeing evidence on your end. And that's especially useful when it comes to contaminants, in the sense that you can find and correct an issue with your air filtration setup, your cooling system, fuel system, so on and so forth, before it starts to cause poor wear. Because when you start seeing things visually, often that's when a problem has really gone from bad to worse. Yeah. And you're looking at far more expensive repairs than you would be otherwise. And building those trends early on, it lets you spot problems in the early going. I think that's so useful, not to mention the fact that you can gauge what is the ideal oil change interval for you based on how that oil is holding up. So it's really twofold. It's a constant diagnostic, and also you can make sure you're getting the most out of your oil change interval on top of that.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. I'll buy that, I guess. Well, so that brings me to a question that I have actually, I've been putting some thought into and doing some research on, and I found that a lot of people with motorcycles are changing their oil quite often. Mm-hmm. Generally, motorcycles, smaller engine. I don't know if that's why, but the manufacturer will have a pretty low oil change interval.
Yeah.
Anyway. But I'd look around all the time at used bikes that are for sale and whatnot, and being track day bikes or race bikes, I see often at the bottom of the ad, it says oil changed after every track day, or oil changed after every race or race weekend or whatever it might be. And I started to question myself, because I'm like, I'm not doing that near that often. I'm doing it more often than I would have on the street. You know, I think the sample I sent in to you guys actually had 1500 miles on it. That bike had been ridden a little on the street, a little on the track.
Right.
But before that, I would go usually, you know, three or four track days, and then I do an oil change. And some of the reasons I got back when I asked a large question were interesting to me. Some of it was that people thought or think, which I'm not saying it's wrong, but they think the oil breaks down quicker, breaks down easier if you're running it at a higher RPM. And my argument for that was that if the manufacturer gives me an RPM range and they give me an oil change interval, I should theoretically be able to use whatever in that RPM range and follow that interval. So just kind of curious if you have any data on that, or if you guys have seen anything on that line, I guess.
I would say in general, this goes for motorcycles and it goes for really any engine that we see routinely. People are usually changing their oil sooner than they need to. And I think that really speaks to the fact that, you know, if you're taking the time to send in a sample in the first place, you're probably a more careful owner than most. Because again, it's a diagnostic that, you know, it's becoming more popular by the day, but still the vast majority of people don't know about it. But with that being said, yeah, I would say generally people are changing them quicker than they need to. And if they're interested in running longer, that's where we'll suggest an interval should we know that's what they want to do. But it's pretty common to see exactly what you talked about in the sense that a few examples I brought with me, people are tend to change, say, every 2 to 4 race weekends I'm seeing a lot, or 4 to 5 track days will be fairly ambitious. It's pretty common to see intervals in that range. I would say, you know, one of the longer examples that kind of caught my eye was a Yamaha engine where they were doing 10 events between oil changes. And that was probably, you know, fairly long for what a lot of folks, you know, in this line of interest are going to do. So generally pretty conservative. But if we know that there's an interest in running longer, then we will look at the data and see if that tells us if a longer interval is doable given the harder use and how the engine and the oil are responding to it.
Okay, that makes sense. So is that... Do you guys sell like a pump or something so I don't necessarily have to be changing my oil?
Yeah, we do. So we sell a hand pump that you can buy off our website, and that way you can sample without changing. And again, it's just that 3.5 ounces, so you're not taking a significant amount of the sump capacity to get a look at things. And that will allow you to see if you need to change that oil or not based on a variety of factors. We're going to see, for example, how fast metals are accumulating. If the engine is wearing at a steady rate and we can see that the oil is maintaining, like I said, viscosity, if the oil filter is holding up, and also you can add on a TBN, which is the total base number, and that will tell you if there's active additive remaining. That's what's important to combat the acids that build up while the oil's in the course of cleaning and lubricating. So if that report speaks to the oil holding up well, taking good care of the engine, and metals being stable, then I would suggest a longer run.
Okay, that makes sense. So TBN, total base number, and that's talking about additives. Viscosity is going to be the thickness of the oil, for lack of better words. We can look at the metals in the oil. We can look at the coolant, if there is any. Hopefully there isn't. After listening to your show a little bit, I learned that's not just like, hey, we found coolant. It's, hey, we found these certain... elements that are generally coolant related. So you keep bringing up filtration, which is interesting to me because I had the question of, if you believe that your engine is wearing down quicker, why would you change your oil more often? Why not just filter it more? But generally, a manufacturer is going to recommend doing an oil change and then a filter change, in very general terms, every other oil change, right? If anything. So I'm kind of curious on your thoughts on that, on mentioning, like, is the filtration working? How do you guys go about testing that exactly? And what does that kind of look like?
Yeah. So oil filters are obviously in place to keep solids out of circulation. And the way we check for solids is with the insolubles test. So you take a small amount of that 3.5 ounce sample size and you spin it in a centrifuge. And then the solids will separate and we'll be able to see how many solids are there. And there is a limit for engine oil that we prescribe, which is 0.6% of the sample volume. Okay. Upwards of that tends to be where you start finding poor wear to go along with it. And upwards of that amount's also what can indicate things like poor combustion. So if we are looking at a low result, that speaks to the oil filter doing its job of keeping insolubles low. So if you want to keep that filter in place and run it longer, that test alone will help give you assurance about how many solids are in there and if the oil filter is indeed keeping them low like it should be. The thing about filters, though, is they are not going to keep metals out of circulation on the scale we're testing for. So okay. Metals and parts per million, not something that oil filtration is typically going to remove. You know, those are good for catching what you can see visibly, whiskers mm-hmm. and shavings and such, but not a level in parts per million.
Okay. All right, that makes sense. So that's different, I guess, than the metals in solution vice the insolubles mm-hmm. test. So insolubles yep. is the bigger stuff, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. Insolubles are the actual oil that is oxidizing as it experiences, you know, the process of picking up combustion byproducts and cleaning, lubricating. It's the oil itself that over time, it's really about the use though, not necessarily calendar time, but while it's in mm-hmm. use, it will slowly oxidize, hopefully slowly. Of course, things can accelerate that if you have water or excess heat, but it slowly oxidizes and that's what we're catching.
Okay. Okay. Engines are interesting. I do work in a little bit of a mechanical field. I work with oil, mm-hmm. but I don't work with things that are running oil and water and air and all these different mm-hmm. gasoline all in one system. Yep. So engines always, when I think about them and I start to break them down, they really make me think.
They are one big puzzle for sure.
Yeah. So as far as I had a motorcycle a few years ago that I ended up doing a full engine rebuild on it. Mm-hmm. Just a full overhaul refresh on it. And I had a theory that the piston rings were long gone, mm-hmm. not there anymore. Mostly because some guy was riding behind me one time and he's like, "Hey, there's a lot of oil in your exhaust, but
like, yeah,
you might want to look into that." And so I just took it in. Is that something that you guys would also be able to see, is leakage in there of fuel getting in, like, and I guess the same for antifreeze, you know, how do you see that and what's the benefit of catching that at, well, I guess how small of a leak could I have caught that problem earlier? Maybe
if leaks are due to an issue, or I should say if oil consumption is due to an issue, like a worn piston ring, a ring that's broken or stuck. Well, piston rings are made of chrome typically, and we're going to find chrome in the spectral analysis. So a high level, and really it doesn't take much to show that a ring is broken or stuck. So if we see an excess, you know, typically most engines, this goes for motorcycles, really anything on the road that you can think of, generally they're not going to make more than one or two parts per million of chrome. Like okay. the smallest, you know, I know it's kind of hard to illustrate at times to think about if you're not familiar, but that's the smallest amount of metal really that you can even find. Generally one or two parts per million. Okay. So it doesn't take much. And if we see a high level of that, that can indicate a ring is going bad. And if you're noticing oil consumption to go along with it, that tips you off to a ring. And if you catch that issue in the early going, hopefully you can keep other metals like aluminum from the pistons or clutch or iron from cylinder liners also increasing. So if you address that, then you can keep other metals in good shape instead of having, you know, an outright cylinder failure or something yeah. bigger. But that's a ring metal that is going to show up in testing, and we'll be able to see that for you. Also, when it comes to, you know, coolant, that's a particular contaminant that's going to show up in the spectral results too, in the form okay. of potassium and sodium. Some oils use sodium, so we want to know what you're running, but generally high levels of each, we can be keyed in pretty easily into a coolant leak.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a question though. And I'm actually curious. So coolant, when we're talking coolant, we're talking antifreeze for right. sodium and potassium, correct? Mm-hmm. Because yeah. most race bikes are going to be running a non-glycol based coolant or even just distilled water.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you would need to know? And is that something that you guys have come across before where you're doing a little bit of a different test or?
Yeah. So water itself, that's going to present itself in our testing as well. You know, even mm-hmm. if you aren't seeing potassium and sodium, I actually had an example that I found when I was pulling in some research before this episode, where it was a Yamaha 600cc and it was heavily contaminated with water. And even though we didn't yeah. see potassium and sodium, there was roughly 4% water in the sample. And 4% of the sample volume being water is a definite sign of trouble. Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether or not we're seeing coolant markers, we know that water, especially visibly, shouldn't be there. And even if you can't see a visible separation, it'll make itself known during another test we have, which is the flash point. That's when mm-hmm. we drop oil into a heated brass cup. And the flash point, the lower it goes, if it's below the should-be value for that oil type, then that indicates fuel, but also you can see the reaction as that water is being cooked off. It will cause an obvious crackle. So while there's going to be some moisture in the very, very microscopic, minuscule amounts I'm talking about, visually it should not be evident. And if it's there, whether you're running a non-glycol or a glycol-based coolant, you can detect that in analysis as well.
Okay. All right. Is that more helpful though? Like say I'm sending you in a sample, would it be more helpful to you to know like, hey, I'm not running antifreeze. I'm not running a glycol base. I'm running this coolant or I'm just running distilled water.
Right. We always want to know if you have anything that's either non-stock, if you're running an alternative coolant, if you have modifications, really just of any kind, they're helpful to know whether that influences how your engine is wearing or the way contaminants will show up. Anything you're doing that's outside the norm is just going to make for a more informative report for you because, you know, when you talk about the elements we find in testing, you know, there are more than one. There's often more than one source for this element or that. So knowing if you're doing anything alternative is only going to make the report more useful to you.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. I like it. I like it. All about making it useful for us, which is good. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, it is. Oil's nuts. Okay, so just because I don't know, and I'm curious if you do know, having probably analyzed a lot of oil in your time, the difference between a motorcycle oil and a standard engine oil. And I bring this up because a lot of people run specifically a Rotella T6 heavy duty diesel oil in their motorcycles. And I did that once for a while, and then my bike sounded weird and I stopped. And didn't sound weird again afterward. I don't know if that was related or not. I had no actual information on it. But if you can tell us, what is the difference exactly? I know it's got to be different to lubricate the clutch because you have a wet clutch system in a motorcycle, so they share the same oil. What are those differences? Or even, you know, between a motorcycle diesel and a standard engine oil, what generally do we see?
So there is a lot of overlap in terms of the additive elements. However, when it comes to a diesel engine oil, they tend to have a pretty stout additive package, higher levels than what you'll find in a gasoline engine oil. So you're going to have more concentration of additive in there. And when we talk about additive, it's mainly in the form of, you know, boron and calcium, phosphorus, zinc. You know, these elements serve as either anti-wear or detergent dispersants. So detergent dispersant additives like calcium, magnesium, those are there to hold particles in suspension so they can be filtered. And then elements like boron or moly, phosphorus, zinc, those are your anti-wear additives.
Okay.
So, you know, sometimes what we'll see or hear when people are running diesel engine and a diesel engine oil in a gasoline engine, you know, if there's a catalytic converter, it's known to cause problems on that front. Okay. Outside of that, there are instances where people will just run it because they like it. They like how the engine runs with a diesel engine oil in a gas engine. If you like the way it runs and we're not seeing a problem from a wear standpoint, then, you know, it's kind of hard for me to say, don't do it. Right. But obviously operational issues that really are going to be apparent on your end, maybe they don't immediately stand out from a wear standpoint. You will see differences in how those oils look from an additive standpoint. And of course, viscosities tend to be on the thicker side with a diesel.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. So this whole clutch thing with the wet clutch, which I love a wet clutch. Definitely. They're great. Make it much easier. Also, do you have any motorcycle experience yourself? Just curious.
Oh, no, not me, actually. Other than reporting the data.
All right. Interesting. Do you guys have a lot of, I don't know how many people work for you, how big you are, but do you have a lot of motorcycle riders and whatnot in the
We actually do have a couple on staff. Our lab manager, he has a couple. He has a Honda, and I believe he has a Yamaha as well. And yeah, so we have a couple riders on staff, and actually they will often be fielding a lot of operational questions whenever we want to talk about things they might encounter with this component or the other. But yeah, when it comes to a wet clutch and seeing evidence of a problem with that, that also applies to what you'll find in an analysis.
Okay. So what, because I mean, clutches are, they're wear products, right? Much like brake pads, they're supposed to wear down over time. So what specifically do we look for, and what would give us an indication of like, hey, that clutch is about to go, or you must have done something to that clutch? Because I also know that when we're out racing and you're launching a bike, generally your clutch gets worn down pretty quick,
right?
And pretty heftily. So,
yeah. So generally, aluminum often speaks to the clutch, and it's also a piston metal. So importantly, when we're going through analysis, we have to understand context clues as to what the likely source is. So there's often cases where if aluminum is off the charts and everything else looks pretty good, that's a good sign that's probably from the clutch primarily. And I say that because if you have a heavy amount of aluminum in there and everything else looks good from a wear standpoint, then it's probably not from the pistons, because if the pistons were the primary source of that metal, then you'd also have probably high levels from the rings and the cylinder liners. So if we're not seeing other issues except for a lot of metal in the form of aluminum, then the likely source is a clutch. So you want to rely on how these metals are balanced against each other. And that's something that we'll, of course, walk you through and explain in the comment if we see what looks to be an issue with the clutch or otherwise.
Okay. All right. I like that. Okay. So one of your favorite episodes that I think you did long, long back, which I don't know if the listeners, I don't know if you guys caught in the beginning, but Joe here, Blackstone Joe, as he calls himself in this podcast, also has a podcast. It's great. If you're nerdy and into data like me, it's awesome. I love going to work and telling everyone, I just listen to this guy talk about oil.
That's
pretty
niche.
Good.
Yep.
Yep. But you had an episode called No Time to Change. And I have to talk about it, one, because I just wanted to talk to you about it, but two, I think it is kind of interesting. You know, a lot of people put their bike away for the season, and the first thing they do in the spring is, well, I'm going to go get an oil change, get my coolant flushed, get all this stuff done, and make sure the bike's good to go for the summer, which is great. Yep. But if I have let my oil sit in the bike over the winter, does it necessarily mean that I need to change that oil?
Yeah, probably the most helpful thing, I think, in terms of people's bottom line and really just easing some cost here and there, is letting them know that calendar time is not an issue. So oil is great for many reasons. One of them being it does not simply deteriorate just based on the time that's spent in the sump. Okay. So metal content, it's only going to accumulate when it's actually doing its job of cleaning and lubricating. And similar with contaminants, it's only going to pick those up when it's actually being used. So you don't have to worry about condensation buildup. You don't have to worry, you know, that's mainly was a concern for engines that had open breathers back in the day that would allow water to get in from the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Not an issue with modern engines. Furthermore, the additives don't just stop working because the oil has been sitting.
They don't just disappear.
They have to actually be in the process of removing those combustion byproducts, lubricating the engine. That's when they deteriorate. I mean, obviously I'm familiar with this, but anyone who wants to send in a sample where, you know, they have the concern of, hey, it's been in there, who knows how long, just let me know if I can use it. An analysis can certainly ease your mind on that front. But if you take it from me and how long I've been looking at samples, which is going on about 7 years now, a TBN, like I talked about earlier, that tells you how much active additive is there, doesn't drop just based on calendar time. And the metal content, it's dependent upon use, likewise with contaminants. So keep that in use based on actual hours or events, days, whatever interval you're tracking, track the actual use. And don't worry too much if you put it away for the season, and don't think you have to. You know, changing the oil, it's never going to hurt,
yeah.
Except you could be dumping oil that was perfectly fine.
Okay, so it just hurts the wallet, not necessarily hurts the engine. That was a
exactly
another question I had, is I had talked to just a mechanic friend of mine, and you know, just ask him about his thoughts of how often you should do an oil change, and what that should be based off. And I actually heard an interesting rumor. I don't know if you guys have any data on this or have heard anything about it, but I heard that with the modern oil and the additives that are in there, there are thoughts on, again, this isn't data backed at all on my end, just a rumor, but there are thoughts that you're actually doing yourself a disservice if you don't leave the oil in long enough to actually let the additives work and whatever else. And I don't know enough about oil and what additives are exactly to know if that rings true at all.
So the idea is you have to let the oil become attached for a certain amount of time to keep the motor healthy. Is that what they're?
I think so. Yeah. On? Essentially, if you're, I don't know. His thought was that the additives deposit something on the surface of the metal. And so if you send your oil through and you're just sending it through and only, let's say in a car, you're changing every 200 miles for whatever ungodly reason. And just every 200 miles you're changing oil, you're not giving that additive a chance to do the work. So,
Yeah, I mean, oil is there to, you know, among other things, you know, reduce friction and prevent more metal from being made than it would otherwise. So I think generally it's only going to clean the system up more. And I can't think of a negative. I've never seen a situation where someone changing the oil too often brought about anything concerning in terms of wearing components, or you know, any signs of a mechanical issue just based on that. I do know, you know, one other common concern, I guess, when it comes to transmissions. I know a lot of people worry about changing the oil at all because some people have the idea that it like marries to the components and that if you change it, then you'll disrupt the you know, the oil passages or something. That's something I always like to let people know. Even if it's a transmission, don't worry about changing it, except for the fact you need to be sure you're putting the right stuff back. Transmissions above anything else. You know, a lot of times with engines, you can get away with running, you know, say a viscosity that's slightly off spec. That's generally okay, but when you're talking transmissions, they're a much more intricate system usually, you know, and that's something where you want to make sure you're putting the right oil in. And that's the only concern with changing it is, you know, whether it's a shop or someone else that isn't yourself doing it, you want to keep a close eye on it. But yeah, putting fresh oil in the system is only going to reduce metal and freshen up the additives, take out whatever oxidation has been formed. Okay. And yeah, we haven't seen any ill effects from that.
All right. Well, good. That's a good debunk there on my part.
Yeah.
So what about the other big question I had, which I feel like around oil changes, there's a lot of just old fashioned. This is what my grandpa told me, right? Yep. My grandpa said, you always do this, which way long ago before we took our cars to shops for literally everything, people were doing a lot more to their own vehicles.
Right.
Well, one of the things that I grew up hearing, and that I still stick to be completely honest, but is to not change your oil brand. Don't change the type of oil. Don't change the brand. Don't change the weight. Don't change anything. Whatever's in there, that's what it needs. You got to stick with it. Otherwise, you'll blow up your engine. Not actually, but you know, it's not good for it. Is that true? Does that matter? What are the differences in brands? What could cause that thought, that theory?
Yeah, so there are differences in terms of different brands and blends having a recipe that is often the selling point in terms of, you know, we use this amount of molybdenum for anti-wear, you can't beat it, or we have so much detergent dispersant that it's going to keep your engine so clean that you can run it X amount of miles. You know, there are reasons for brands and blends marketing themselves in the way they do. So it's not to say there's no difference, but when it comes to your motor, it's not going to care if you switched from a semi-synthetic to a synthetic. It's going to be okay. As long as you're running an oil that's API certified, that carries an appropriate viscosity. But like I said earlier, even some variation there is generally all right. You know, if you're running 540 and you've been running 540 for, you know, a few oil runs in a row, running a 1040 out of necessity is not going to cause the engine to suddenly have a problem it didn't before. I mean, that's just not something I would ever suspect. So consistency is good in the sense that you'll know what to expect from what's in that oil. You know, like I talked earlier about some oils using like sodium, for example. It's a marker for coolant. Personally, I avoid it just so that I know in my engine exactly where that element's coming from. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts. I know where it's coming from. But beyond that, though, there's not really a concern with switching brands or blends. I like to let people know that to put their mind at ease, especially if they're in a situation where, you know, they have to make do with what they have, or maybe a price point of what they've been running has just become too costly. And they're like, well, there's another 1040 there. It's cheaper. Can I use it? And if it's API certified product, it's going to meet the standards in terms of additive ingredients. And, you know, because there's a baseline. People can really juice it up in terms of, you know, liquid moly. Moly's in the name. It's probably going to have more moly than, you know, a Rotella. Okay. Right. You know, but it's motors tend to be a lot more flexible than we give them credit for. And I also think that when it comes to oil types, you can kind of get wrapped up in marketing and forget the fact that at the end of the day, think about viscosity. Think about what your engines should be running on that front. And generally, you're going to be doing just fine running a product that meets those specs.
Okay. All right. Well, good to know. That that does put my mind at ease a little bit. I'll be honest with you. I'm still going to keep reusing the same oil every time. But
run what you like. Yeah.
Yeah. Into the point of another reason people were telling me that they were changing their oil literally every track day was to save money, right? You're going to save money on an oil change by buying a new engine.
Right.
Through the premature wear, which I disagreed with, because I was like, dude, if you're doing 20 track days a year and you're doing an oil change every single track day, that's going to get expensive real quick. So as an alternative to that, you know, I think that's why I brought you on, which we kind of already talked about, but, you know, stretching out, what would that process look like? You know, if I ordered a free sample kit from you and I'm like, all right, cool, I just did one track day, I'm going to send in a sample.
Yeah.
And I put in there, yeah, hey, I want to elongate this. I don't want to spend so much money on oil anymore, but I also don't want to buy a new engine prematurely. So how do we work this? What is going to be your guys' process with this customer moving forward? How, you know, the notes coming back, and how does that all look?
Yeah, so every engine has its own story, in the sense that if you ask, you know, 10 different owners what they're asking of their engine, you're probably going to get 10 different answers. So we want to rely on, first, what do we see on average for this engine? What's typical? Okay, then as you build trends, what's typical for you? And then we're going to see if, say, for example, you have an engine and you're doing a lot of racing, it's probably a safe bet that, you know, in the vast majority of average files that we have, maybe they're not 100% racing data. Right. So we want to see how your engine is responding to that. So you start with your baseline sample. And when you send in that baseline sample, I would stress to people not to, let's say, go for gold and stray from what you've normally done. Do what you normally do. Whether that's one day, say you've been changing every track day. Okay, that's probably a little too much, but don't go for what you hope you can achieve right off the bat.
Don't go 3 years and be like, hey, how's this?
Yeah, start with what's typical for you. And then we will evaluate how your engine and the oil responded to that. And if everything checks out, then we'll suggest a longer interval. Generally, it's going to be a gradual approach. You start with two track weekends on a sample, plus maybe 5 to 1,000 miles of just riding outside of that. Okay. Then we can go from there and suggest, say, 4 to 6. Or if you want to strictly track mileage, you know, generally 2,000 at a time is usually not too taxing. But if you're only racing, then maybe that means we want to suggest smaller increments. I would just let people know that you want to start with what's typical for you, and we'll either dial it back or we'll extend from there based on what we're seeing. Because even if you're running an oil that says you can go X amount of years or X amount of miles, whoever is making that oil you can't possibly account for whether or not that engine has a pre-existing issue, right, be it in the form of contamination. Maybe it's already been wearing poorly due to a problem. It doesn't matter what you put in there. Yeah. It's not going to be fit for this particular interval. So we will base these intervals around the intervals that you're tracking. So if you're a mileage person, hours, race weekends, whatever the case may be that's applicable to you, we'll build those intervals around what exactly you're doing, what you're asking of the engine.
Okay, awesome. One thing I will say is that, you know, if I've got a race dedicated bike or a track dedicated bike, those are often not street legal. So what is the timeline like generally? I know you guys get busier and busier every day, which is good. Happy to hear it.
Yeah.
But what does that timeline look like? Because I might be able to, you know, if I've got 2 weeks between a race weekend, I was going to change it, but do I have time to send in a sample real quick and say, hey, can I stretch this for another weekend? Or, you know, if we're in the middle of this analysis and I'm wanting to already kind of take advantage of that, can I pull a sample without doing a change? And generally, how long does it take to get back to me?
So our turnaround time, I believe, is close to 3 business weeks right now. In fact, I can really check on that just a second. Actually, no, we've cut this down, which is good. So you talked about us getting busy. I mean, it's never been, I would say we've grown at about 10% clip every year that I've been here. And that has now gone up exponentially. And I think part of it's due to the podcast, part of it's due to more social media engagement, more people finding us on forums, whatever.
Yeah.
Fortunately, right now, we're looking at a turnaround time of about 10 business days, but due to the way that can fluctuate around holidays and just, you know, where we're at in the bottleneck, you can always call us and just see where we're at that point in time. If that turnaround time doesn't meet your needs, then what you can do is you can take the next step and overnight a sample if you need to, which, you know, if you're really needing to dial in a problem ASAP, or if it's you're trying to sell the bike, you're trying to buy a bike, if you're pressed for time, you can overnight and we can expedite that way, because we go through USPS for, you know, 90% of the samples that come to us. We get in so many samples a day that if we were to try and like pluck one of yours out of, you know, 600, you know, it's a needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
Whereas if you overnight it, we can handle it individually, push it to the front of the line, take care of you that way. So turnaround time can fluctuate. If you're pressed, call, see where you're at, where we are at. And then, of course, there's always the option to you if you want to overnight a sample for as rapid a response as possible.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. I like that. I should have overnighted mine. I'm just kidding. Anyway, I think mine...
I'll keep an eye out for it.
I think it just got there yesterday or something like that, because I didn't originally have the TBN in there. And then after listening to the podcast, I was like, oh, no, I need that. That is like specifically what I'm looking for. So
Yeah. When you want to run longer, it's a useful data point for sure.
Yep. So my only other question, just to get a feel for Blackstone Laboratories, I'm kind of curious about how long you guys have been in business. Yeah. In the beginning, we talked about, you know, where motorcycles are at on the line, which, to be honest with you, all around the world, we're generally under everyone else because we're pretty niche, which is great. That's not great, but it's fine.
Builds character. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But then also just kind of your experience with like any racing teams, any, you know, drag racers, not necessarily motorcycles, but as far as like race engine oil samples, do you guys have... like anything that's I don't know how you run your data and where all that is, but does that category come up often, I guess?
Yeah, racing is something that I would say, you know, we are looking at, gosh, we might have 14, 15 analysts on staff right now. And I would wager that each one of us is going to end up looking at some form of racing sample, probably, I mean, multiple a day. And that's every single analyst is going to see multiple a day. Motorsports in general are indeed a pretty big segment of what we look at. You know, there's even, you know, drift solo, just drift accounts where that's the use those engines are seeing. So that pretty much as demanding as it can get. Drag racing falls in there. I mean, really, when you think about it, any system that needs oil to do its job falls in under our umbrella. So, of course, with racing being a pretty big component there. So it's certainly something we see every day. And what we want to do is take into account how demanding that use is, which is why, you know, we've talked about averages already, but that's really just a starting point. And we build a average, not just for us, but for you, that is based only on the samples from your engine and what you're asking of it. So all of this ties into the idea that this sort of diagnostic should be accessible to you and your experience level. And that's been the mission ever since we started, which was back in 1985. Okay. So ever since then, like I said, it's only grown. I think that's due to niche groups like motorsports, racing of all kinds, finding out how to take better care of the engine, finding out how it's responding to modifications without having to open it up and spend a lot of money to do so.
Right. Yeah, I was, I'll be honest, I was very surprised when I got online and saw free oil sample kit. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And I was like, well, hang on. There's no way I'm getting a free sample. What is the sample price? Which if you want to share that real quick, that'd be great. Cause it surprised me. So
our standard analysis is $35, and that covers a check for wear metals as well as all the contaminants we've talked about previously, fuel, coolant, dirt, debris, that's going to show up there as well, in addition to how the oil held up based on viscosity, and we're going to see how oil filtration performed based on insolubles, all wrapped up in $35. If you want to add a TBN to see active additive, that's only an additional $10, which, yeah, it does surprise a lot of people, usually in a good way, in the sense that diagnostics, pretty much always, but especially these days, it's so expensive to just get a look at how the engine, whatever system you're taking care of, because again, this expands beyond engines. We're looking at anything that needs oil. So if that's a differential, a gearbox, and of course, other fluids like coolant, we can analyze that directly to see if you need to change that. If you have gasoline or diesel fuel you're unsure about, check that. So it expands really to anything that your engine needs. And just for $35, whereas, I mean, gosh, I was pricing some diagnostics recently because I had to see if I had either an alternator or a starter issue that I was sorting out. And I mean, it was going to be $120, the cheapest route just to rule that out.
Yeah. Generally what I've seen is a shop will charge you an hour period baseline, and our maintenance cost these days is, it's rough. So
So considering you're getting, I mean, wrapped up in that cost, it's someone's got to unpack it. Someone's got to set it up for the lab. Someone in the lab's got to run it. And then someone like myself is going to interpret the results and see what's going on. So all that wrapped up into one, I think it's really a pretty good deal for someone who's wants to take good care of whatever it is they're running.
Yep. I have to agree with that. Like I said, I was surprised when I saw the number, happily surprised. I was on the happy side because I think probably 5 or 6 years ago, I learned that you could send your oil off for sample to someplace. I didn't know your name specifically, but just someplace. And in my head, I'm like, well, I'm not going to pay someone $300 to tell me I have oil. Like, not going to do that. But, you know, after learning what all you guys look at, the benefits of it, and then and then that price point, I think it's well worth it. Which is why I brought you on today. You know, for the listeners, I think if you're like me and you've been wondering why we're changing our oil every single track day, maybe it's time to send in some samples and see where it's at. So,
yeah. And if you ever want to talk to someone directly, you know, you asked me earlier if I had any riding experience. If you were someone who was like, I want to talk to Luke on staff, I want to talk to Luke with the Honda and see if he understands exactly what I'm going through, you can do that. Same with like aircraft samples. We have multiple pilots on staff. We have, you know, a pretty wide range of experience. We have former mechanics on staff. We have a pretty good breadth of knowledge when it comes to that. So not only are we providing all these results in the way I described, but it's also a report that we hope everyone can understand because we're writing it in plain English. And then if you ever have questions, you want to talk to someone, see what their experience level is with what it is you're taking care of, we're only a phone call away.
Sweet. Well, good to know. All right, Joe, well, I think that's going to wrap us up for today, unless you had anything else that you wanted to mention.
Oh, no, other than thanks for having me on. And I listened to some of your show, and you're doing good stuff. And it's fun seeing another, you know, a long, seems like you've been doing this for a little bit. You know, you had a pretty good amount of episodes out there. So how would you say the show's evolved to where it is now?
Oh man, I don't know. JK Moto Podcast has been, it's been awesome. Yeah. We've been going about a year and a half. I think March of 2023 is when we started. It all started, my co-host Cole, who's not with us tonight, I got him, I'll take credit for it. I got him into doing the sport bike thing and track day thing. And he started watching motorcycle racing with me, and we would end up calling each other, you know, every week, if not more, for hours at a time, and just talking motorcycles, racing, track days, whatever it might be. And so, that mixed with the fact that I have seen personally, not necessarily a decline, but definitely not a incline of motorcycle riders. And I love what I do. I love riding them. I like doing track days and racing. And so I figured, you know what, easiest way to get more people to do it is to flood the internet with it. So let's see what we can do. And,
awesome.
Yeah, I think it's been fun. It's been good to get the fan base going, get everyone listening. And then also the connections that we've made with people like yourself, you know, reaching out to different places and being able to talk to all sorts of different people and learn a lot of different things. Definitely a unique opportunity to broaden my own, just my own information, honestly. Like I said, I would have probably never would have sent a sample off, an oil sample off before. And here I am, not only sending it off, but talking to you about it. So
yeah, awesome. Well, yeah, well, we love helping people take care of whatever it is that they enjoy, whether that be, you know, a bike, a boat, airplane, Corolla, you know, so whatever it is.
Yeah. The Corolla gets you to work, you know, work makes the
sure
money.
Sure does. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Thank you. And to the listeners, thanks for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed. Go check out Blackstone Labs. We'll have a link down in the description. Send off an oil sample. I can't make you do it, but I did. So I think you should. And maybe you'll get Joe to write up your report. And we'll see you next week.
Yep.